we operate with the mentality, you do good, you get a trophy. You don't do good, you get replaced. And that's still what we do. We just don't yell about it.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. We all want to be successful, but we rarely stop to ask what success really looks like. I know so many entrepreneurs who live and breathe their businesses, pouring every ounce of energy into their work. And while it might make their companies big and it might make them wealthy, it often means neglecting family, friends, and their own personal happiness. So were they really successful? Everyone defines success differently, but to me, that doesn't sound like success. It sounds like misery. That's why I wanted to talk to David Burke. He's one of the biggest names in the culinary world and has owned and operated some of the most notable restaurants in America, including the legendary David Burke Townhouse. You might also know him from Iron Chef. And how did he become successful? Well, it's been a process. The kitchens he grew up in were filled with chefs who yelled and screamed at employees to get things done. It was normal to put in 80-plus hours a week for a paycheck. David realized that he'd need incredible grit and hard work to survive in this industry. And he pushed himself, and he pushed himself, and then he pushed others to the extreme. But David has changed over the years. He takes better care of himself and has learned to manage employees differently. So I wanted to know, what does balance look like to him now? And now that he's evolved, what does he think it really takes to be successful? So to find out, I sat down with him at one of his restaurants. Our conversation is coming up after the break. When it comes to building and maintaining IT systems, smaller businesses wrestle with slim budgets and resource constraints. At the same time, they're pressured to deliver agility, security, and a great experience for their customers. How can small businesses transform their IT infrastructure without breaking the bank or straining personnel? Cisco. Cisco solves a small business networking puzzle. And there's three things they do particularly well and also that can help. Number one, look for a networking solution that's easy to deploy, operate, and manage, so it can scale seamlessly when it's time to expand. Number two, security is top of mind for everyone, especially small businesses that might not have the people or bandwidth to monitor the network as closely as they'd like. For that reason, it's key to look for security features that offer automation and are easy to deploy and use. And number three, businesses that don't think they can afford to make an upfront investment in technology might want to ask about leasing and financing options. There are many easy ways to spread your payments out over time while avoiding technology obsolescence. So, visit cisco.com/go/HSH to discover our current promotions and free trials and explore the small business portfolio. That's visit Cisco, cisco.com/go/HSH. Again, you'll be able to discover current promotions and free trials and explore the small business portfolio. And now, on with the show. We're back. Early one morning this summer, I headed over to meet David at one of his restaurants, which is called David Burke Tavern. It's on Manhattan's Upper East Side. It was obviously going to be a long day for David as he was there early, so I wanted to learn how much has really changed for him. Can an old-school chef really change his ways and find success? And here's what he had to say.
When you start out as a young chef, cook, chef, and back in the, you know, in the a few decades back, you know, the passion of being a cook is intense, especially in the high, if you're in a New York City high-profile restaurant, and the intensity. And you know, the chefs are extremely driven people with passion and creativity, and a lot of demands. That kitchen, there's a lot of, you're running a submarine back there. You're running like a, you know, it's thing. The show must go on, you know. So you get wound up, and you put so much effort into a single, even a single plate or an hors d'oeuvre or whatever it may be. And other people around you are working hard, but they're not doing what you do.
Right.
So not everybody not everybody's living to work.
Right.
They're right. Working to live. And so when I started to become a partner in a restaurant, I was at the River Cafe as a very successful, young, dynamic award-winning chef.
Three stars.
Represented the United States and Japan, won two huge awards, one of which no American ever won before from the French government. Anyway, came back.
Yep.
Still. But back then, and we had great service at the River Cafe, but there was still, it was always tension between the chef and the man in the front.
Right.
The back is the kitchen and the front's the dining room. All about, you know, perfection. And trying to get perfection every minute of every day in a restaurant, it's just not possible. And it'll make you crazy. Insanity.
For sure.
But you strive for it anyway.
Yep.
You come to a point when I left that restaurant, I was the chef. I made a good living and I made a good name. I opened a restaurant with Alan Stillman, who was the founder of TGI Fridays, and of course Smith & Malensky. And we opened Park Avenue Cafe and I became a partner.
That was your first restaurant.
That was the first one I had a minor interest in.
Okay.
A good minor interest because we were so successful.
And what
I started to learn, because for the first year I kept yelling a lot back then about, you know, cleanliness and why is the waiters not doing this and how come then selling space.
Did you do that when you were at just, you know, a chef prior, or was that now because this was your baby?
No, I always did it. But River Cafe had a more disciplined wait staff at the time. It was a higher check average, and you had low turnover because it was such a great place to be.
Right.
So we opened a new place. Now, Smith & Malensky isn't known for its service like the River Cafe is, although it's good.
Yeah.
So the mentality was give them a nice steak and slap it down. You know, the old gruff, you know, rip the stuff. So, and I didn't think that way. You know, I was like, what do you mean? You know, this isn't, you know, it's got to be put down with finesse.
Right.
So we struggled with some of the, we had a successful business from day one and learned a ton from him as a business. Buzzy O'Keefe, the owner of River Cafe, learned a lot about.
Sure.
So not only did I learn a lot about from great chefs, Charlie Palmer, Daniel Blue, and Waldy Maloof that I worked for, and the great ones in Europe, but I learned from the owners. And these are businessmen and guys that operate at a higher level of thinking because it's the bigger picture.
Right.
When you're a chef, you're so focused on the beauty of that plate and this dish and the results and what a critic's going to say that you're not seeing.
Yeah.
All the other mechanics around the wheel. There's a lot of spokes.
Right.
And you need every spoke to be successful. So, you know, when you start becoming an owner, you start stepping back and saying, okay, that waiter works hard too.
Right.
That dishwasher works hard.
Right.
The kitchen's always really they're the guys in the trenches. Boom, boom, boom. And we know that, and that's the life you choose. And then you have to realize that my father was important in this too, was sitting down and saying, not everybody wants to work as hard as you.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to be you. And if everybody was you, you wouldn't be where you are.
That's very true.
So you have to realize not everybody's ambition is to come in and spend 60, 70 hours a week working.
Yeah.
They want to spend time with their family. They want to have hobbies. As a great chef, I didn't do that as much.
You were 24/7. That was your life.
Well, my career, basically. I have three great kids and all that. But, you know, I wasn't the coach of the Little League.
Right.
I mean, my hours didn't dictate that anyway. Even if I wasn't as ambitious as I was, I was still working 50, 60 hours a week. And for most chefs with kids, they're living in the burbs. So now you add out another 20 hours of commuting. And all of a sudden, how much time do you have anyway? So you look at the big picture of and how important everybody's role is. And that's how you change your way of thinking a little bit. And instead of shooting first, asking questions later, which was the old chef's mentality,
right.
You know, barking and cursing and yelling and throwing stuff. You know, now you sit back at both sides of the story. And you then as an owner, you start to learn entrepreneurial thinking,
right?
Especially if you're surrounded by great guys like Alan Stillman who have run several businesses or creative, and also don't sweat the little stuff. And this is what I learned from one of my other partners. You know, you squeeze the lemons that have the juice.
Yeah.
Because if you complain about every little thing, and then you get to a point, and there's also with intensity in the kitchen and emotion and coaching. I refer to being a chef or being an owner chef as the coach of a team.
Sure.
When you're coaching on a side, you look at Bobby Knight's method of coaching versus Belichick's.
Yeah.
Emotionally.
Oh, God.
Completely different, right?
180 degree opposite.
Both same results.
Yep.
Great winning chefs, you know, and so there's different styles. So you have to change your style of coaching.
Right.
That's what I couldn't coach like Bobby Knight anymore.
Right.
Or the Gordon Ramsay method, because people wouldn't tolerate it as much anymore. The early days, they wanted to learn so much from me, they would. You could get away with it at certain places.
Right.
Not to say get away with it sounds terrible, but we were so intense. No mistakes weren't tolerated, tardiness. And again, then you have the element of, so that was channeling emotion you throw that into the Wild West days of restaurateurs and chefs, younger age, where you went out every night.
Yeah.
So now you're coming in with no fumes because you got home at 4.
Yeah.
You're back at 10. And all, you do that 3-4 days in a row. So you have to change that behavior too and learn that the body needs mental rest and physical rest anyway, especially when you're standing up for 60 yeah. to 80 to 90 hours a week in,
yeah.
in a hot kitchen. Then you go and sit, you're sitting at a bar stool for another 20 hours a week. All of a sudden that catches up to you in an angry way.
Right.
So now you're walking around a little bit angry.
Right.
And everything sets you off. So you change your behavior. You change yep. you pull out some of the emotion.
Yep.
And you got to step back a little bit to see forward.
So let me ask you, and I know we're coming to you live from the restaurant here, so we're getting all the sounds. We're getting the full.
We'll vacuum our floor. Yeah. Somebody shut that up.
That's all right. You're getting the full restaurant experience. Hey.
Okay, thank you.
I like that. You get the feel. But so going back, I've always seen people in the restaurant business, the amount of hours, the time, the chefs, and you go back to when you were starting in the early 90s, it was expected to be that way as a chef and to run your kitchen. And how long did you operate? Like, how long were you operating like this for?
Yeah, it's interesting because the demanding kitchen, you're talking about the mentality yeah. of, you know, the yelling, the screaming, the discipline, like training for the Super Bowl.
Sure.
20 push-ups or military, right. you come in. The reason it was that way is because the chefs that were running kitchens that way were trained that way.
Right.
So
right.
it's like raising a family. If you're raised that way, you're probably going to be that way.
Exactly.
You know, there's what's acceptable is acceptable. You think it's normal. And eventually that, in a good way, that's changed. Because you also got, you have, it used to be an old boys club. There was mostly men in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And when I went to the Culinary Institute of America, there was 2 out of 20 women in my class.
Wow.
Now it's 51% female.
Wow.
So I think that has something to do with some of the softness or changing and the respect.
Yeah.
But again, back in the, we had a bunch of guys. We had some girls, females.
Yeah.
And we always ran at a high level, more of a joking way. We joshled around. It was like locker room.
Right.
Sure. It was really teamwork.
Yeah.
When people needed help, we helped them. It didn't matter whether male, female, whatever. When people were doing great, you told them. When people messed up, we yelled at them a little bit.
Yeah.
Because if someone drops a ball in the end zone and the Super Bowl, he's getting yelled at.
It's the old school mentality. And
but it doesn't mean we don't like you.
Right.
At the end of the game, which is our service, you just say, hey, let's get it better. Tomorrow night better be better. Or let's go out. We'll go out and have a beer.
Right.
You know, and you work out. Nobody hated you. You didn't get fired. If you did it 3 weekends in a row, you know, you didn't make the team. It's like very similar to a,
sure.
if you ain't hitting the ball, you're going to be replaced.
Now, do you think you have achieved amazing success and you achieved it being that way for a long period of time? Do you think you would have been as successful if you didn't have
no way.
That mentality?
No way. No way. Some people don't respond to political correctness nicely.
Right.
No, we operate with a mentality. You do good, you get a trophy. You don't do good, you get replaced. And that's still what we do. We just don't yell about it. This is an intense business. If you want to be in a top level in cities like New York or in suburban New York or anywhere in the U.S., you need to be able to run at a certain level, at least from my perspective. I'm not saying I'm right, but that's how I've operated. And I don't think if I didn't have determination, courage, and call people out when they made mistakes. Now, people—that's called management,
right?
Right. Not everybody wants to do that. You have to be the bad guy,
right?
You know, when you manage, someone's got to be bad. You know, when you see a manager that everybody loves, I always think there's a little problem there.
Interesting.
You know, they got to be respected and respected and stern and fair. But you know, I sometimes love guys. They work 6 hours a week and they put a dish in front of me that I know is overcooked. So I'm like, well, yo, this is not going out.
Right.
Now, why do you think about a guy that puts? I'm sitting at the. He overcooks something. And he puts it in front of me. Now he makes it my decision whether I'm going to serve it or not.
Right.
And don't put me in that position. You know it's over. It's not right. So don't like look at me like the parent and say, you know, here's the best I can do because I know you can do better.
Yeah.
Now timing, you know, there's always circumstances, but the effort to be number one and to be great is to do it. And I know you can do better. But don't put me in a position to lower my standards because you suck.
Exactly.
And that's not, I don't like to be put in that position because I don't want to send it out.
Yeah.
If I was that cook, I wouldn't do it. And I want people to be as good as I was. I'd never ask anyone to do anything I can't do or wouldn't do. And if I have to go back and help you, I will.
Right.
I'll jump back there. And that's one of my strengths. I can do pastry. I can do this. I can do that. I'm creative.
Well, you've
but
done
I'll do it,
you've
with
done
you.
Everything from the start.
But I'm
you
gonna,
started as
you know,
a dishwasher,
yeah.
right? I mean, as a kid.
But if I'm so coaching you and you can't and you're having problem running, I'm running with you.
Right.
I'm going to take you around the track.
Right.
I'm going to teach you how I breathe.
Right.
I'm going to show you how I make this.
Right.
So, and I get it done. I'm going to spend a little time with you like a parent would spend time with a child and say, you need work on this. Let's do this. Or why don't you do this? You know what? By the way, you're only 5'2". You no wonder you can't reach that shelf. I'm going to lower the shelf for you.
Right. You know? Do the things that help, but you don't do the job for them.
Well, you got to customize the situation sometimes for certain people. We do it with scheduling. We do it with this. And that's what people need. If you have kids, we take that into consideration with a schedule. But, like, you know, some people come in, they got to step on a milk crate to go get something. I'm like, lower the shelf.
Right.
Get a handyman in there. Boom, lower it.
Right.
Makes sense. You know, just because it works for one person, one size doesn't fit all in every kitchen.
So that mentality, right? I agree. You're an entrepreneur. Like, it's your business. I'm the same way when I have my businesses. It's if a guy's not doing the job or working, you get rid of him because you try and coach him, you try and help, but you get rid of him. But obviously, that's made you successful. But when did you realize, and as you said you wouldn't change that because you definitely wouldn't have achieved the success you have. But why did you have to make changes? When did you realize that? Was it more personal than business?
No, the labor market has made us change too. You just
minimum wage.
Well, it costs too much money to lose somebody. So you need to, once you've got 3 months of training and they're not doing, I tend to look at it like, if we didn't train somebody in 3 months, we must be doing something wrong as managers.
Right.
Some people are not trainable though, you know, and the attitude's wrong and the workforce has changed. The privilege of people to come in here, and also the fact of being a chef has changed. In 1985 to the year 2000, we had a line out the door for people that wanted to work for people that could teach. In 1977, I told my dad I wanted to be a chef. It was not yet a profession. It was a utility job.
How did he,
I'll tell you exactly what he said. He said, David, his name's David. He goes, David, I know you smoke pot, but I didn't think you smoked that much.
Because at the time, it wasn't no Food Network. There wasn't you're a chef, you're working at the local diner or whatever, you know, flipping.
He was thinking like a Burger Heaven.
Right, right.
Not like paper hat. He's like, when he had friends that worked in, as, people, and, you know, he came from Brooklyn. He was like, this is
a neighborhood.
Yeah, you were down, got a corner house in the suburbs.
He and worked his butt off to get to the suburbs, and here's his kid going out.
But I think he had all the right in the world to question it because my ability to be something else was in. He saw it in me to be a leader.
Did he get to see you be successful?
Oh, yeah, he's still alive.
Oh, great. I was going to say, my father passed away a few years ago.
Yeah, he's 84 now.
Oh, he's young still.
His name's David Burke. I got a funny story. So when we first opened, so once he got behind me, he tried to talk me out of it, and then I wouldn't have it. And stubbornness or whatever. But before I get to the story about him, the guys that were in the CIA back then, you know, Charlie Palmer, Rick Moon, and Todd Inglis, you know, Michael Kira, I can name a few. You know, we went to school to be the quarterback of the kitchen. We wanted to be good chefs.
Right.
We saw something in it that was made us feel good. And again, it goes back to why would you want to be a painter?
Right.
Or why would you want to be, you know, there's something in it that makes you feel in control and there's gratification on a daily basis. You make something and you're proud of it. You're like, wow.
You're an artist.
You had a passion. And the energy of the kitchen, the camaraderie and the teamwork, and the fact that, you know, I don't have to be there at 9:01. If I show up at 10, that's okay, because they're a little bit loosey-goosey with that. But there's a sense of, and you're teaching. Then there's a element of being able to teach someone, and it also welcomes everybody from around the world. You don't have to be a certain height, weight, this and that, certain color, certain language. I worked in Europe. I didn't speak English. They treated me pretty good.
Yeah.
People come here, don't speak English. So I remember the days when I was in school in France and pastry and I couldn't speak the language. And I'm like, just look, but the visual and people helped me. So it's a great industry for that. So the story is, I go to school and my dad's like, he's twisted. He's like, I got some, you know, I saved some money for you to go to college.
Oh, God.
I said, good. I'll take it.
Chance.
So we had to turn around. Now, no one could ever know that you'd wind up in a boat like this because there was no mentor. It didn't exist. So my point is this. Food becomes very fashionable. Being a chef becomes respected. This, that, and the other forever. And it becomes cool. Now, all of a sudden, you get a wave of youngsters that want to work in an industry, and it's cool.
Of course.
I want to be a chef because it's cool. I get tattoos, grow my beard, do this and
that.
I can
become a celebrity, man.
But they forgot one part. You got to bust your ass.
That's what I love about the restaurant business, because a lot of other business where kids pick up, and my business was sports, entertainment, can hang out with you. But the one thing I love about interviewing, especially chefs, business people, is they all busted their ass. They started as dishwashers. They know what it's like to run a business. So I'm sure you get a lot of people who come into your business and you realize they're not going to make it.
Oh, I got a great story. I had a guy recently. He's a good-looking kid. Yeah. Tattoos, perfectly unshaven.
Right, right. The whole look.
The $150 leather apron with the Instagram pages. Unbelievable. He, you know, I bring him in.
Oh, my God.
And I said, listen, day one, right? He writes himself the schedule. He puts himself on a 40 hours. We all know that's not happening.
Yeah,
so
right,
my manager showed it to me and he laughed. And he goes, this is going to be fun.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so I said to him, I said, why don't you go downstairs and grab a case of chickens, bring them up. I'm going to show you how we have a unique way of boning them out. And he goes, because, you know, I'd rather not start with the butchering. I haven't done it in a long time. You know, it's in front of the staff and all that. I'm like, okay, all right.
That's kind of crazy.
I said, go get this.
You got to be thinking at that point. I mean, like, you're David Burke. You busted your butt to become, and you get a kid. Like, that's got to kill you.
I said, he wasn't a kid.
He wasn't a kid.
He was in an executive sous chef position. And I said, go get the salmon. Get the salmon, you know, skin it, take the pin bones out of it, and I'll show you how we roll it. He's like I said, you know, butchering. It's been a while, a little rusty, chef. I'm like, really? I said, okay, let's do this. I give him 20, 40 bucks.
Right.
I said, there's a grocery store down the street, organic green grocery store. I said, go in there, get yourself a wheatgrass, and don't come back.
I love that.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. If you run a business, then you know there is absolutely nothing more important than hiring good people. Talent is what will make or break a company. Unfortunately, the actual process of finding the right talent to hire can be tedious at best. Today, you need more than a job board. You need an efficient way to reach the right candidates at the right time. And there is nothing better than LinkedIn to help. Over 600 million members like me visit LinkedIn to make connections, learn and grow as professionals, and discover new job opportunities. I have personally been a member of LinkedIn since 2004. No joke, I have over 26,000 connections, and LinkedIn literally provided me the platform to find the right clients and the best employees, building my last business, GoViva, into a major company, which I later sold to Creative Artists Agency. I will never build another business without using LinkedIn, guaranteed. So when you post a job listing on LinkedIn Jobs, you're putting all of LinkedIn's data to use. It'll recommend candidates that could be great matches, and you can target your promotion to people with the right skills. And because resumes often come in fast and furious, LinkedIn will also give you a dashboard to manage all your candidates in one place. So time to get posting. To get $50 off your first job post, go to linkedin.com/HSH. Again, that's linkedin.com/HSH to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. And our next sponsor. When it comes to building and maintaining IT systems, small businesses often wrestle with slim budgets and resource constraints. At the same time, they're pressured to deliver the same agility, security, and great experience for their customers as larger businesses. How can small businesses transform their IT infrastructure without breaking the bank or straining personnel? Cisco. Solving the small business networking puzzle is what Cisco does. And here are three tips and areas that Cisco can help you with. One, look for networking solution that's easy to deploy, operate, and manage, so it can scale seamlessly when it's time to expand. Two, security should always be top of mind for everyone, especially small businesses that might not have the people or bandwidth to monitor the network as closely as they'd like. For this reason, it's key to look for security features that offer automation and are easy to deploy and use. Three, businesses that don't think they can afford to make an upfront investment in technology might want to ask about leasing and financing options. There are many easy ways to spread your payments out over time while avoiding technology obsolescence. So, visit Cisco, that's CISCO.com/go/HSH to discover our current promotions and free trials and explore the small business portfolio.
And we're back.
And he goes, you're serious? I said, yeah.
That's amazing.
I said, let's not waste each other's time. So,
and he walked out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of course,
he didn't work out.
Yeah.
I waited 2 weeks from the start, wasted my time. Anyway, yeah. So back to my dad. So I open, you know, things are going well. River Cafe, Park Ave Cafe, we go public. I make a little money. I'm opening a restaurant with
Donatello. So you went Park Avenue.
Smith and Walensky Group. Smith was part of the Smith and Walensky. We opened a bunch of Maloney Butcher. I opened a lot of, learned
so
a ton of stuff.
Your first real success on your own kind of partnership.
I learned how to cook in kitchens.
Okay.
Alan Stillman and being part of Smith and Walensky Group at the time, that's what it was called. I sat on the executive committee.
Okay.
And I worked in the office for 1 year.
So you really learned the business side.
So I learned
the business.
I learned the way he thinks, ahead of the market, advertising, marketing, promotion, analyzing numbers, and all that.
He seems like a big mentor.
It's a great guy. Great guy. And a really great restaurateur.
Sure.
Because he knows how to put back the product.
Yeah.
And another guy who, but these guys, like Buzzy and him, their emotions.
Who's Buzzy?
Buzzy O'Keefe, the owner of the River Cafe.
Okay, there.
And Wally Maloof, and even Charlie Palmer, the other chef. Danielle Belluda, when I worked for Danielle, was loud and feisty. And don't get me wrong, he worked his tail off, and he's one of the best chefs in the country. But his whole style was different. And I'm sure it's a little different now. This was 84.
Yeah.
Charlie Palmer, Mello. Wally Maloof was like my big brother. He taught me, like, under his wing. We're up in the suburbs at a place called La Cremaire. So different styles.
Yeah.
But I had to take over the River Cafe. At 26 years old, big job, 50 cooks, blah, blah, blah.
How'd you get,
raise my voice. Number one, I was scared shit.
Yeah. It's like a rookie quarterback kind of, you know. You come in, everyone's older. You got to command the
huddle. Well, they'll take advantage of you and when you don't, you know, you don't put out.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You've got to kind of, you know, I hate to say it's like going to prison because I never went to prison. But you're supposed to punch the first guy you see.
That's true.
You know, and that's kind of that mentality. It's like, I'm here to get this job done. It's going to get done.
I just saw a great quote by Mike Tyson. I just bring this up. It's totally off. It said, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. I love that.
That's a great line. That's a great line.
So you're 26. You get this. You become. You learn. You have to command things. You go on. You know, after River Cafe,
we opened Park Ave Cafe. Okay. Now I have a minor interest in a business, so I'm seeing the real numbers. I'm seeing the P&Ls. Learning this.
You're not just making a salary.
What are our numbers? And he made a smart deal. Here's what Alan Stillman does. We talk about entrepreneurial thinking. I didn't know who he was. I never ate in steakhouse.
Did he approach you and say,
yeah,
look
they
at
called
this
me. They
star.
Realized they found out I was looking to move. Right? Okay. And he brings me to his office, and his office is awards, all the stuff. Oh, you know, nicest guy. It really is. He's just, and I'm like, I said, he goes, like, you know, Tim Zagat told him to call me, and so did David Lederman from David's Cookies.
Right.
So those are the two guys that said, you got to call this guy Burke. And so he goes, you know, people speak very highly. He goes, so he says to me, he goes, I got this spot on Park Avenue. It's Park Avenue. And I need a great chef and I want to make your partner. And I said, okay. I said, everything sounds. I said, I don't really know you. I'm going to California to do some cooking for a week. And then I'm taking a tour and I'm doing it. And he goes, well, you haven't been working for a month or two. I said, nah, I know. I got divorced. And I had got divorced about 3 or 4 months earlier. So he goes to me, he goes, I need a decision in like 5 days. I said, Alan, I said, I just met you. I met you a couple minutes ago.
Right.
I haven't even seen the space yet.
Right.
And he goes, I said, I'll go look at the space today. And then, you know, I'm going to be gone. He calls this guy, Mark Levine. He goes, Mark's the CFO. He goes, Mark, how long does it take to get a corporate credit card from Mr. Burke? And I'm like, I don't even know what a corporate credit card
is. Right, exactly.
And he goes, a couple hours. So he goes, Alan Stillman says, David, I want you to go to all five of my restaurants at the time, have a glass of wine, have an app, introduce yourself to them, and come back. And he gives me a corporate card. He goes, here, I hope this helps you with your decision. Have fun. Spend as much as you want eating and drinking. And
wow.
I need an answer in 5 days.
Wow.
And I was like,
I mean, you got to say, what do you say to that? What do you say to that?
You walk out of there and you feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
Somebody really wants you. And it also was at a time that I could use some money. And I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
He's not stringing me along. This guy means business. He's like, he puts his money where his mouth is. And he always did.
That.
And he always did. And so I went out and made my decision, made a deal with him. And we made it. And again, a smart deal. So he says to me, I said, well, I want X, Y. He off made me enough. I said, that's not enough money. He goes, how old are you? I said, I'm 30. I was 30.
Right.
He goes, it's a lot of money for 30-year-old. I said, Alan, you see that guy over there? I said, he works 40 hours a week. I work 80. So if I worked 80 hours a week, for the last 10 years, I have 20 years experience.
Yeah.
Versus his 40 hours a week. And he looked at me and he shook his head. You know when you blow a whistle and the dog's head goes like this? His head went
moves
like
to the
that
side
sideways. And he goes, I can't argue with that. That's profound.
That's true. And you know,
said,
you know that.
He said, oh, he goes, I'll meet you halfway. I said, deal.
That's
we got
it.
A deal.
But he knew.
He goes, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
I said, if I was a pilot, I'd be retired.
Yeah.
I mean, I have enough hours in school, you know, to do this.
But you had enough self-worth and realizing, like, at the time.
But also,
like,
at the time, I didn't have really that much confidence to ask, because, you know, when you're young.
But you
did. I explained it to him in a way that was like,
and then we might just be like, all right, this guy wants to be my partner. I'm like, you knew your value at the time.
Knew the value. But I also knew how much I was going to work, which he didn't know.
Right.
Because his chefs at the time didn't have a celebrity chef. There wasn't people like me
right.
that threw it.
Guys punching in
that
and
put everything
out.
Off to the yeah. side until that restaurant was a success. You look at a restaurant like a child, and when that thing, you're not leaving until that thing is walking. And you're there, and that thing is settled. And if it's 90, 100 days in a row, you're there. Right. That's how the old school guys like me do. And I hate to say old school, but, you know, you right. put it in. And the chefs like me because, you know, when you're not there, it's not the same. And at the beginning, you set the pace. You set the pace for the rest of the lease.
Right.
When the first year is super important until the cement dries. You're like, here's our systems. Here's what we do. Here's our food. Here's our reviews.
Right.
Here's what they're saying. Now, this right. is pre-Yelp. Pre-open yeah. table, yeah. pre all this.
Well, you
when
lived
you had to advertise.
On one,
well, you lived on one or two, three good reviews, yeah. And that has changed quite a bit. That's a whole nother. So my yeah. dad's name's David Berkman.
Okay, yeah, let's get back.
So now we have success.
Right.
Now I'm opening a restaurant. I put up half the money. Donatello does. We've got a beautiful location. It's called David Berkman Donatello.
Yeah.
I happen to be at my brother's a chef. He works for me down in Seabright.
Okay.
In David Drift House by David Berkman. So it's snowing like crazy. We open December of 2003, right before they changed. January 1st, couldn't smoke in restaurants anyway. So
oh,
I get to
I
that.
Remember.
Remember
oh
the smoking
God.
Limousine?
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah,
the, song, the, yeah. the sign says, it's snowing. My brother Robert, he calls my dad. He goes, hey, Dad. He goes, we got to sign up. He talks like that. It says David Berkman Donatello. Right next to Park Avenue. And my dad goes, is it snowing up there? He goes, yeah, it's snowing. He goes, well, make sure that snow doesn't cover my name.
I love that, man. He loves it, right? It's got his signs
well, you know,
all
it's
over.
Just, it's just like, you know, he was arguing. You know, listen.
It's his name.
I never forget that story.
I love that.
My brother had to tell me because I wasn't on the other end of the phone. And that was the moment I said, all right, now he gets it.
I love it. Now, you're a Jersey guy,
yeah.
right?
I'm born in Brooklyn, but I was raised in Jersey.
Okay. How does that, you know, you come to New York City, you make these restaurants, this incredible New York fare. I mean, a lot of Jersey guys do it,
yeah.
right? Springsteen. I mean, you sure. have. But what'd you take from your dad growing up in Jersey that, was it the work ethic?
Oh, 100%. My dad came from Bed-Stuy. That's where I was born. And he actually grew up above a bar called Burke's Tavern, which he never talked about.
No relation.
I didn't meet my... No, it was his father. His father
oh, was
a barkeep.
Okay.
His father had a bar. But he hated the bar business
because
he saw what it was like.
He saw, yeah.
It was, I don't know if they even served food, but I think, you know...
Sure.
But him and his brothers all grew up, and he thought the bar business was not a healthy business,
yeah.
which back then, who knows? You're talking about the 40s, 50s
oh,
in a bar.
Oh.
And I didn't meet that... I never met either of my grandfathers, which okay. is one of the things I would have really... When people ask me who would I like
yeah,
to cook for.
Like dinner, you're making...
Yeah, yeah. So he was like... When he heard about like being a cooker and in the restaurant business, he's like, oh, you know. So I grew up in Jersey. He drove the subways for New York City. So he worked in New York, commuted.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked hard, man. But he was disciplined. And later on in life, he got his GED. And he also was like the first person that jogged in our neighborhood. He went on to win marathons in New York City.
So he was
for
ahead.
His age group, he won the
ahead.
Boston Marathon at 40.
Wow.
2 hours and 56 minutes. So he was a determined guy
yeah.
when
he
it came
that,
to competition. And
he had that drive inside.
He had drive,
him.
Big time drive. I mean, very disciplined guy, very, you know, church going guy.
Ahead
fair.
Of his time with eating and, well
but,
and exercise.
But I feared him.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was, you know, I didn't fear him. I didn't live in fear. But when he said do something, you either did it.
So that's what must have made it hard when you told them you wanted to be a chef.
Well, it's respect. I mean, you respected your parents. Back then, if your neighbor yelled at you, you listened.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, you walked across somebody's lawn and a guy came out and kicked you in butt. It's okay.
Your parents
snagged them.
Yeah, exactly. It's so true.
So he was. He had a work ethic and he had a do it right the first time attitude. So I got a lot from him. My mother as well. My mother was also.
How was she like?
She's still here too.
Yeah,
and she was the mellow one and more like, you know, my dad was like, you know, when I was a kid, I thought he was a mechanic because he's fixing a car. I'm like, he doesn't know shit about fixing cars.
Right.
But he's got buys a book and tries to fix a car.
Yeah.
I'm the oldest son.
Yeah.
I'm holding a flashlight getting yelled at. I'm like,
move it over here. Move the light. You can't even do that.
I said, it's afternoon. You don't need the light's not doing anything. You just want my company. Wallpaper. So I can do. I, listen, I loved cooking because I hated everything else around the house.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you another quick story. Yeah. So, 'cause this is a funny one. So he thinks I'm a con. I'm a slickster. I can bullshit.
Right.
You know?
I'm like,
I'm very smart in school. I have a good memory, so I memorize everything. So I graduated high school early, and I was this wrestler. And I couldn't play football or basketball when I went to high school because I was too short at the time. And I also, that was a good running back and peewees and all that. So I did well. So I used to have to weed, you know, like around the yard, you know, the flower beds and all that shit. So, and we had a pool, so I would cut the grass, put all the trimmings, they would turn black, and I'd just cover the weeds.
Right.
Well, I didn't have to weed. I think I'm the smartest guy in town, right? And he would give me, you know, 10, whatever he gave me, allowance. So one day, he's like, he's a diehard Met fan, too. He's sitting back there, and I'm like, I said, Dad, you know, I just come out of the shower. I got this Leonard Skinner T-shirt on or whatever it is, going to the dance. I'm like 14 or something. And the girl's waiting, and I said, Dad, you know, cough it up, you know.
Yeah.
I got the. He says, you know, you're really getting fast at this weeding. I said, Dad, how hard is it? He goes, hey, I guess you're right. He's got a scotch. He's watching the Mets get their ass kicked. And he's like, he goes, well, have a good time. I said, he goes, that's why I gave you extra money. I said, what do you mean gave me? He goes, you weeded, right? I said, yeah. He goes, well, then you should have found the $12 worth of nickels, dimes, and quarters under the weeds.
That's amazing.
And I was like, you got to be shitting.
That's amazing.
And he gets up and he goes, let me show you. And he goes, you think I'm stupid? He goes, pull that weed. Like, he moves over the mulch, pulls the weed, there's a quarter. Another one. So that after that day, I never messed with him.
No, you can't.
But the lesson from that
what
is.
What is the lesson?
Well, you know, you give people a shot. You watch them, but you make it into a game instead of just screaming and yelling.
Yeah.
So I would put a coffee cup with the date and a big smiley face under with a dry erase marker under a table, and I would say to my manager, did you make sure you sweat everything got cleaned and everything?
It.
You did it every day. Oh, really? I said, go under table 42.
I love
Bring
it.
Bring me that coffee cup. That's 3 weeks ago. I said, don't bullshit
about it. Do you find most people respond and then they did it, or is it just ingrained in a person if they're going to work hard or not?
Well, I don't want the manager to go down a sweep there, but I want to make sure he's checking what his other employees are doing.
Sure.
And if they know, but that has to make him smile too. It's just a way of saying, I got my eye on
it.
Instead of coming in raging because you got no sleep and saying, why is there dust on the... Yeah. I mean, it's always maintenance.
Well, it's a style of coaching like we talked about.
That's
Bobby
correct.
Knight or Belichick, whoever
That's
it might be.
And also,
if
you make it fun and educational, even in the heat of the moment in the back, you can pick on one guy here and there. Everybody starts to laugh. They get in a good mood before the game.
They
have a cup of coffee. And then if there's something that gets, you know... Listen, it's very intense.
Yeah.
You're feeding 200-300 people, and the timing of it has to be perfect.
Oh, God, I never realized.
And when somebody's dragging or forgets something, you know, you kind of put you, it's, you know, so you got to take the personal stuff out, and you got to curb the emotion of it a little bit. And if it does get what you think might be a little bit heated at the end of the night, you got to make sure that everybody don't let someone go home thinking they failed. You can say, listen, tomorrow you're going to, you know, you got killed. I would have been in the same shoes as you were, but let's try to dig it out a little better.
So you go on, you Park Avenue Cafe, this partnership with Alan, you open up other restaurants. When did you really feel like, hey, you know what? And do you feel like, hey, I've achieved success? I feel more confident in my ability.
You know, that's a great question, because even though I was successful, I didn't think it was enough. It was like this, you know, I was worried about what other people thought, not about what I thought. And when you judge, you know, when you try to do it that way, you don't enjoy it.
It's got
to
be exhausting. You're always trying to please people.
Well, you think about being a chef and what they call a celebrity chef. Eyeballs are on you. People can criticize you every night. And, you know, if you're an actor or an athlete or any other celebrity, you get lots of time off. Baseball player gets half the year off. An actor gets off between movies. A news guy gets off here and there, or whatever other celebrities there are. They get lots of rest.
The only one I could think of that might be similar is like a Broadway actor.
They work
every
hard.
Night.
They work hard, yeah.
You're performing every night.
Broadway actors are very similar to chefs.
Right.
They work because they got to... The show must go on.
Right.
Same as a restaurant.
Right.
Now, they have understudies. We have sous chefs. But it's not, you know, so, but yes, that's a great one. And, but you do it for 10, 15 years as a restaurateur, you need to get some rest, right? Because all of a sudden, you start going sideways.
Now, is that what happened when we started with the show, with the obstacles and the way you've had to change your lifestyle? When was it that point came?
Well, you get to the point where... After Alan Stillman and Dave McDonald, tell them we sort of built a company. We had several restaurants. And my partner and I at the time, split up. Mm-hmm. So we had to sell off a couple, lose a couple. I had a partner that thought he should have the rights to my name, and we weren't having that. So that went into a whole
which
other
is partnerships
thing.
And understanding.
So now we're back. So yep. Then after that, you know, we took a good long look at what was going on, how we got to that point.
Right.
Why are we at this level? Why weren't we smart enough to do some? I right. made mistakes. Other people made mistakes in this on a personal level. And you realize, you know what? When you're working this hard and you're doing a lot of business and you're doing two steps forward, one and a half steps back, that's not progress. So you got to, you know, you got to change some of your lifestyle. Yeah. You got to watch the eye on the ball a little bit more. The whole celebrity chef game, you know, again, I was part of the creation of that.
Yeah.
Right. I was one of the guys that was in it.
Timing was.
So I was, no one taught us how to act. No one taught us how to handle the success. No one, it's like rock stars. They call us the rock stars.
You become rock star overnight. Must have been fascinating for you because.
So all of a sudden, you know, they're flying us to Hawaii to raise money for cancer. And we're going to stay in suites with limos.
That's amazing.
It's like, wow, okay. Because we're raising money.
Yeah.
And we're the entertainment. And then all of a sudden, you got to look back and say, okay, well, where's this? What's this going to do for me for retirement? Where am I going to be at 70? Because I'll tell you one thing, you cannot stand in that kitchen at 70. And there's lots of chefs in the 60s and 70s, 60-ish, 70-ish now, that are in a position where, you know what, I don't know how to retire.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I don't want to be in that position.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden I shift my way of my lifestyle.
Okay.
And I get, no, I'm,
you
I get up.
You can't be
I get
in the kitchen
let's put it
time.
This way. Yeah. I get up at 5 in the morning like most serial entrepreneurs and successful businessmen do. I get up and I catch the day. My half of my stuff is done by 10 o'clock, and then I, you know, I don't. I used to sleep till 10 because I'd be out till 3 or 4. So I don't do that. I don't run around anymore. Yeah. I get home. I do that. And I get my pleasure from my entertainment in other ways.
Right.
You know, it's just it's a maturity thing.
Yeah.
You get to a point and say, well, this is fun, but I think it's getting old. And I think there was a big shift in that anyway over the last few years where you want to live a healthier lifestyle and catch. And I have there's too many people that depend on you. When you realize you have a 1,000 employees. That
it's
if
you.
You're not healthy and workable, if something happens to you that has happened to some other chefs in the industry where they lose their brand recognition for doing something, so that's terrible.
That's a lot of lives.
That's a lot of people you're touching.
Yeah.
And forget about your media family. You're talking about your restaurant family and their kids.
Of course.
And that's when you start to realize that how proud some of the employees are that they show their kids who they work for.
Of course.
Or they let us back.
That's got to be a great feeling for you.
Yeah, or they're on the subway wearing your shirt that has your name on it. So it's like, I had a youngster, Pakistan guy, I think it was. He's one of my waiters. And he, you know, he's just a waiter. He said hi every day. And he worked hard. He worked in the kitchen. He took the food up the stairs.
Yeah.
And this little guy. And carrying all these like 100-pound trays.
Working hard.
And one day he showed me a picture. His daughter just graduated from the Bronx High School of Science and the Arts, whatever that really
That's
thing is.
The best
and he wanted to take
City.
A picture of me with me and him together and send it to his daughter. And I was like, I had no idea that this guy could he worked so hard for that girl.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like,
Busted his butt and kind of like your
but
dad.
But he never bragged about it. Nobody ever asked him how's his family, what he does.
But
and
it's
this
for
and
his
that.
Daughter so she can live the American dream.
And he works 6 nights a week, this and that. You know. And sometimes he got yelled at, sometimes he didn't. Not yelled at meaning you suck, but like, let's go, hurry up, hurry, you know, the coaching aspect. So then you step back and you realize how proud I was of that guy. You know, how proud he's got to be of his daughter. Yeah. So it's like, that was, and I say that because
that changed
as a celebrity chef, you think that everything is all about you and every restaurant, and it isn't.
No.
I mean, yes, you're the heartbeat, and you worked hard to get here. Now you got to protect that brand.
Yeah.
Because people depend on it.
Yeah.
And if you want people to stay with you, and they see you swinging from a chandelier,
it's going to go downhill.
That's right.
So making those changes, understanding that, has that made you a better restaurateur?
Oh, yeah. 100%. And a happier person. But more of a, because progress moves a lot quicker than rust. Yeah. You know what I mean? And we make progress and we fix things in real time and we navigate our own course and nothing else. So the only thing that'll take us off course is ourselves. Economy, this and that, and the other thing. But in general, we're in the same boat as everybody else. Everyone's got the equal playing field, like running a race.
Yeah.
A marathon. Everyone's created equal in shorts. My old man told me that.
So well, he was running
when
two
you
hours
run a race.
45 minute marathon.
You got a fair shot. Good. So minimum wage goes up, no smoking, this and that. As long as it's across the board, we're in good shape. And then it's how you operate and run your business.
I got to ask you. And we have a little bit more time left, but like one of the biggest things for me, and you've been so successful, but 80% of restaurants, I think the numbers, they fail within the first year. Rent, especially in New York City, rent is way out of hand. And now this minimum wage, $15 minimum wage, which a thought of it, it's really a great thought. But how did these things must make owning restaurants so difficult? Like, if you're a young chef listening to this podcast, you want to start your own place. Is it a lot harder to do it now because of this?
New York has become a place that it's hard to make money. Our focus now is doing restaurants in Jersey.
Wow. So you moved.
We have three restaurants in Jersey.
Going back home.
New York City is good to build a brand. Yeah. It used to be great to make money, and I don't think any restaurateur would argue with me in New York City that between the Board of Health, the minimum wage, the sexual harassment, encouragement to sue people, food costs, labor costs, all that stuff, the minimum wage alone is going to create the market. And there's only so much you can raise your prices. So the politicians that are saying that minimum wage should go up is 20 bucks an hour, and the tip, a waiter in New York makes $10 an hour, I think. Yeah. Now, in Jersey, it's two. They still average in Jersey 25, 30 bucks an hour, right, maybe more when they get the tips. So the waiter now in New York is making $45 an hour.
Right.
Now the cook's making 18.
Right.
So why are we complaining? Where's this coming from? And it hurts the business and it hurts the clientele. I mean, because now how much are you going to pay for chicken before you realize, you know what, let's just grab a pizza. And the world of dining, hospitality, and being able to put your phone down for a couple hours and have a meal and socialize is going sideways.
Yeah.
Even for lunch, especially, because then, you know, people are standing in line and getting a salad and eating out of a bag.
Yeah.
Because they want to. It's okay to be alone and be on your phone.
Now, is that millennial?
I think it's a lot of people.
It's
time management. But people don't need to go out and socialize like they used to because they have phones. They socialize on a phone, so it's okay to eat. I eat out alone all the time because I've been doing that for years because of my hours and I'm busy. But I'm never alone. I got a business in my hand.
Right, right.
So it's okay. People are like, oh, I go to movies alone.
Right, yeah.
Oh, I'm like, you know what?
That's, you're not talking to
anyone.
It's
one of the only
there.
Times I can relax.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I just go sit and grab a movie out of the blue. I don't even care what it is sometimes.
You're able to get your mind and totally shut the
phone. Yep, because even at home watching a movie becomes like, you know, that phone is there. So there's things that it's harder in New York. Still the greatest place in the world to have a restaurant if you can afford. The rent should go down a little bit. But, you know, the minimum wage, listen, let's hope it works out. You do have the influx of people. You have the money here. But like I said, 20 years ago, you couldn't get people in the suburbs to spend that much money. And the liquor licenses were harder. But we're in the Garden City Hotel. So with a brand like mine, we can go in and help the Garden City Hotel increase revenue, awareness, and give them a better product. Adelphi Hotel up in Saratoga. Drift House in Seabright. We just took over the Orange Lawn Tennis Club in South Orange. Beautiful. We're in a restaurant called Ventanas in a high-end office complex in Fort Lee. And, you know, we're in D.C. And we're also in... with David Burke Tavern, where we're sitting, and also Woodpecker in New York. Now, we just made a deal for a little in the Time Out Market food hall in Dumbo, where I used to live before it was called Dumbo.
Oh, God. It was a whole different
You know what
world
would have then. Been my best entrepreneur story? Yeah. If I didn't sell my condo in Dumbo.
You could have made more money on that.
I would have made $3 million.
It's amazing.
If I had it,
it's so
20
crazy.
Years.
It's so crazy. Would you ever have thought that? Like, just this Brooklyn, like at the time, what year, when were you there?
I moved in 1989, and I sold it it was called Vinegar Hill. There was no Dumbo.
Right.
That's but I walked to the River Cafe down across the street. I got divorced. I was like, great place, 2,400 square feet, triplex in the Eden Warehouse.
God.
And it was time to move, and I was like,
"That's forget $3 million. That's probably about $20 million right
no,
now."
No, it's about $4 million.
Oh, is it okay?
Yeah, it's a crazy number.
It's just so nuts.
But you know, that's happening. The way it goes.
Yeah, it's life.
That's the way it goes.
And so just going back and kind of getting to the end here, you've changed the lifestyle. You seem really happy and enjoying everything you're doing now. You've expanded. What's the secret for continuing to grow, expand? You know, you have no signs of slowing down, obviously, it looks like. But, like, what's the secret to maintain that healthy lifestyle and also continue to grow? Delegation, is it?
Yeah, well, one of the things we're doing now is when is finding key people that want to grow with us. Now, you brought up, we talked earlier about when somebody wasn't good enough, getting that out of the way. When we have people, we hire people now, we need to hire people that want to grow. Otherwise, someone's in the way. We have a strategy where we're going to have the Deep Dave Burke Hospitality is a consulting division and branding and marketing.
That's great.
And we go
in. Other brands and restaurants.
We're doing something. We're working. working on something right now called Goat Pizza.
Okay.
G, greatest of all time, G-O-A-T.
That's great.
And that'll be a fast casual. We don't even have one open yet, but we have all the plans. We have the plans.
Is that New York or Jersey?
Well, we're going to probably start in New York. No, but that'll be for airports and fast casuals. And we're going to continue to operate the restaurants we have and strategically take on other projects in the same way we do that. So we need to hire people. That's why we want to keep our eggs in Jersey, New York, the tri-state area. True, yeah. So people can, they don't have to move to grow in our company. Yeah, you know, and I can keep an eye on it.
That's right.
I like to drive. I like to drive to my restaurant instead of flying to Chicago.
Right.
Not to say we wouldn't do a deal in Orlando in a good hotel, but now we're in a position where we can dictate some terms and say, this is how we operate. That's as opposed to what you want to offer, and if it doesn't fit in sync with each other. But we love to do stuff in Stamford. We're talking White Plains. Anything in the cities that are outside and around New York City, because it's just too difficult to work in New York City. And again, I don't, actually at a certain, I'm at an age, I don't want to drive into New York every day because, you know, it wears you out.
There's traffic.
And I've been here since 84. Well, yeah, I mean, but you couldn't, 20 years ago, you couldn't have a high-end restaurant in the burbs. They'd come on the weekends only. But now people are spending. They understand value. They want good food. And you don't have to drive into New York to eat in the best restaurants anymore. I mean, yes, New York still has the best, but you can get great meals.
I find myself, me and my wife, we live here in the city. Sometimes we'll actually go out of the city to go to play, which is unfathomable to me, or maybe 10 years ago. But that's
something
that's
refreshing
happening.
About being able to pull up to a restaurant that has grass and eat.
Feels clean. And feels good. And puts you at ease.
And valet park your car and
the
go
valet
on a nice restaurant.
Especially living in New York, when I'm driving around looking
and
for
and
spots.
Then you also have, when you go out to like the Garden City Hotel, you realize how beautiful that town is and how beautiful that hotel is, even though, and Saratoga. And all of the partners we have in these properties, it's all along the same lines of branding. They're all at the higher end and sophisticated level and or smart casual dining. And we also want to partner with people that have growth opportunities for us so we can afford growth opportunities for our chefs and managers. And so, yes, we're building a team. Will there be equity distribution and partnerships? Yes, you have to. Otherwise,
there's a good people in.
Well, listen, it's like franchise players. Yeah. You want to keep them as long as you can.
Yeah.
And that builds us up. You know, we also look for deals that are going to be 20-some-odd years old because we look at – I look at exit strategies and retirement and how long – you know, how long can you –
Do you think you could retire? Do you think you can?
Yeah. I wouldn't retire. I would retire like Buzzy O'Keefe or Alan Stillman retired. Right. They just – instead of working 70 hours a week, they work 35. So, I mean, I'm actually meeting a guy today who's 92 years old.
I love it.
Who is building a restaurant, and he wants me to get into some coffee business with him. I'm like,
God bless. God bless, though. You know, like, if that's what keeps you going, that's what your passion is, that what you enjoy.
New Yorkers, especially, when like Joey Sinque just walked in.
Yeah,
he's 82 years old. New York, working and being in New York keeps you young because you got to walk. You got to exercise.
Yeah, it's a healthy city.
You don't go from a suburban house to your driveway car to your supermarket and you have to get some sort of exercise and this high energy. My opinion.
I agree. I totally. I lived here for 25 years. It's a healthy city. It keeps you. I mean, that's what I love here is the energy and it keeps you going. And when you see older guys and doing their thing and working hard, that's something that like I aspire to be one day. And I mean, you got plenty of time left I'm looking forward to seeing the next iterations.
Well, the next thing for us is education, to opening a cooking school. We're trying to tap into community colleges and get a work study program in the restaurants with that. And I'm trying to do something. We have something on the books called David Burke University.
I love it.
That ties into a TV show and an apprenticeship program.
So
kids have no debt. We teach them how to cook. We teach them how to be good cooks, not chefs. Teach them how to think like a chef. And they work for us for 2 years.
When do you think? When is it going to
work? Well, it's in the process.
It's in the process.
We're working on a project in Asbury Park and where we can start it because you've got to have some housing for them. And I'm thinking about buying a place in Atlantic Highlands to house some of the students so they can take the ferry to New York, work in Seabright or Asbury and this and that. And we want to turn that into a docudrama. We're just at the infant stage now. But that's.
Would it be like a competitor to, let's say, Culinary Institute of America?
It would. No, not at all. No, this is 5-6 kids at a time.
Oh, okay, really.
Molding. The idea is to get them up to speed where the Culinary Institute gives them a scholarship.
Exactly.
And a guy like Thomas Keller or Daniel Blue comes and says, you went to DBU, meaning you worked for me for 2 years, we'll hire you at XYZ.
That's great.
And we want to teach cooks how to be good cooks.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to Culinary Institute, which I did, it's the greatest school in America. you're not coming out as a full-time cook. You still have to go learn from, so you're coming out at a certain wage.
Right.
With debt. Right. I want people to be able to either have the choice to go to school with the skills or be able to make $25 an hour or $20 an hour because they work for us at a certain rate and understand the correct. So, and that's that way awesome. We lead them in and also the connection in which we have. Now, if we start at six or seven or eight or 10 students per project we have, next thing you know, you got 100 students a year. And you know, we're not trying to be an affiliated degree program.
Right.
We just want to start with a small apprenticeship program, maybe hook up with a Marriott, maybe hook up with another.
You're training the next that wave
takes
of
all
staff
of our kids and out because they understand certain skills, techniques, disciplines. And the idea for the show is this. You work 5 days a week. The sixth day, you got to learn how to fish, farm, blow glass, make your own pottery, make honey, make whiskey, make beer, all within Monmouth County, and plant your own herbs and vegetables. In your final exam, you have to utilize all of these products.
That's fantastic.
Now, no one expects you to be a Chihuly glass blower, but we want you to understand what craftsmanship really is in different levels besides food. One of the reasons for this is to make sure that maybe one of these guys or girls grabs onto a hobby besides grinding out 60 hours a week in the kitchen and going out after work.
I hope it's not covering up weeds or doing something like that. You're going to have to look for those. Hey, maybe
that a great
those
story?
Kids are going to be the most successful.
Yeah, but we'd have some. That would be part of the trial.
Exactly.
What do you mean? What do you mean you made this, honey? I don't see any bee bites.
Listen, I could we could talk to you all day. It's so great sitting here live at your place here on 62nd on Upper East Side, David Burke Tavern. David, fantastic. Really appreciate
it. It really went quick, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And it was a lot longer.
Thanks for having
me on. I hope you didn't realize.
Anytime.
All right, thanks again.
Good to see you. Thank you.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.